This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The Central Conference of American Rabbis is in the city this week. Hundreds of Reform Judaism leaders are here for the conference and celebration in the city where the movement started. So what's the significance? Earlier, I spoke with Rabbi Hera Persson. She's the chief strategy officer and starting July 1st, the new chief executive and first female leader of the conference. Rabbi, thanks so much for talking to Cincinnati Edition today. We appreciate you being here.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
So Cincinnati has a long Jewish tradition and a unique place in Reform Judaism history. Tell us what the Central Conference of American Rabbis is.
We are the leadership organization of Reform rabbis. For over 130 years, we've led the Reform movement in terms of important spiritual, social, cultural, human rights issues. And we've also worked to create and sustain the Judaism of tomorrow. And all of that comes out of Cincinnati.
And I understand that you're the first woman to take over leadership of the conference. What does that mean to you?
That is right. It's quite an honor, a privilege, and not a little bit terrifying as well. So we're an organization of about 2,100 rabbis, and that's in North America, but also in Israel and around the world. And our rabbis serve about 1.5 million Reform Jews in all of those different places. And so it's really an amazing opportunity to be able to think about what does the rabbi of the 21st century look like? And I don't mean physically, but, you know, what is a Reform rabbi today in the 21st century? What tools do we need as we move into the future? What new ways do we need to be thinking about our communities, the people that we serve, the work that we do? And part of that has to do with the percentage of women in our organization continues to grow. We now have about 750, maybe a little bit more, women out of the 2,100. And so as that percentage continues to shift, the rabbinate will continue to shift as well. And there are just so many questions about what we need to be doing to serve our members better, differently than we might have done in the past, so that they can serve their communities as well as possible going forward.
There are some religious organizations that don't allow women to elevate to the top leadership posts. So what do you think is the significance of your elevation to leadership for other Jewish women?
We have a proud history of having women in rabbinic positions since 1972, which was the first ordination of a woman rabbi here. And our community is made up of men and women. So to have religious leadership that reflects that makeup is really important. We need to be able to serve the breadth of our community. And by the way, that includes people who are gender fluid as well. It's not just the binary of male and female. And we, as the rabbinate, need to be able to serve everybody out there to understand their needs. Of course, no one person can understand every need and relate to every person. But by having a diverse rabbinate, we can serve a diverse community. I think that that's one aspect. And there are a lot of other issues, too. In the decades that have gone by since the first ordination, there's been tremendous progress, tremendous change made, and yet there are still obstacles that women rabbis face. And in some ways, it's sort of shocking. How could that be after so many years? And yet it's the reality. And look, it's the reality in the rest of the world as well. It's not just in the rabbinate. So my hope is that being in this position will enable me to really focus not only on issues of gender, but certainly those issues will become part of the work that we do and the repair that we need to do and the challenge of how we move into the future. And it's exciting when I talk to young women rabbis. It reminds me of when I was young, talking to women who had already been in the rabbinate and just understanding in this kind of momentous way that there actually were role models in a whole new way for me with the ordination of women. And I think in some ways that's the same thing for the youngest generation now, that they see not only can women be rabbis, women can actually lead our organization. I feel really honored to be in that position and hope that I can do it well and bring a sense of real positive change, success, accomplishment, and growth to the work that we do.
There will be more than 500 rabbis in Cincinnati this week for the Central Conference of American Rabbis annual convention. What is the goal of this convention? What comes from it?
Actually, actually, we're up to almost 600 rabbis, which is a huge number for us. There are a lot of things that we're hoping to do. In some ways, I think that our conventions are a lot of things at one time. In some ways, they're sort of like school reunions, a chance for people to see each other. There are lots of hugs in the hallways. There's lots of reminiscing. And then there are other levels, too. People come for real professional development. They come to do in-depth study. They come to network and connect and hear what other people are doing in their communities and get ideas from that. So it takes place on a lot of different levels at one time. This particular year, we're going to be featuring some really important dialogues with notable speakers on issues that are just so critical today that are facing the American Jewish community, as well as the broader American public.
This conference will also honor the 200th birthday of Rabbi Isaac Meir Wise. And just for people who may not be familiar, he became rabbi at the Lodge Street Synagogue in Cincinnati in 1854. He remained there for 46 years. He started the American Israelite Weekly newspaper, organized the building of the Plum Street Temple, which is now named for him. And he was also instrumental in the opening of Hebrew Union College. So what is the legacy of Isaac Meir Wise in Reform Judaism?
Oh, he looms large. You know, we really consider him our founder. He's a fascinating historical figure. He founded all three of what we call the legacy institutions of the Reform Movement. Our organization, the Central Conference of American Rabbis, Hebrew Union College, the rabbinic school where rabbis are trained, and he also founded what today is called the Union for Reform Judaism. Then it was called the Union of American Hebrew Congregations, which is the organization of all of the congregation, so the lay people. He was a visionary. He had very strong opinions. He wanted to create a Judaism that was rooted in America and that spoke to people here, that was different than what they brought over with them from Europe. And he wanted to unite people. That was really, and you can hear it in the names of all of our organizations. He had this vision of creating a kind of homegrown American Judaism that would meet the needs of this new country and growing Jewish community. And he wanted rabbis to be able to work together and come together in unity. He talks a lot about unity and about working against discord and that there should be one unified prayer book and one unified idea of how we do things as American rabbis and as American Jews. He really put his stamp on even the Judaism that we're living today in this country.
Rabbi, we appreciate your time today. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you so much.
That was Rabbi Hera Person talking to me earlier. So let's continue the conversation now. Joining me in the studio are Dr. Lance J. Sussman, a senior rabbi of the Reform Congregation Knesseth Israel in Philadelphia, an adjunct professor of American Jewish History at Hebrew Union College, Jewish Institute of Religion, New York. Welcome, Lance.
Nice to be here.
And the executive director of the Jacob Rader Marcus Center of the American Jewish Archives, Dr. Gary P. Zola. Welcome, Gary.
Thank you.
And if you have any questions or comments, feel free to give us a call, 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Gary, you were kind enough to correct the way I was teasing this all show long. I said 500 rabbis. You said there's closer to 600. We heard Rabbi Person actually correct me during our chat as well. So not 500 rabbis, 600 rabbis in town. What's keeping these rabbis busy all week?
Well, last night we had a keynote address from the daughter of the famous American rabbi, Abraham Joshua Heschel. He's sort of an iconic figure. Many people remember seeing his face. He walked next to Dr. Martin Luther King and Selma, sort of representative of the American Jewish community's involvement in the civil rights movement. This morning, there was a massive service at the Plum Street Temple where Isaac Meir Wise, as we've heard, presided for so many years. We installed new officers and had a magnificent worship service together. It was overwhelming to see 600 rabbis and then guests all in that synagogue that he created back in 1866. That congregation was only there were only 300 or so members of that congregation, and he built a house that would seat over 1,200 people. He was that kind of a positive thinker, and we did a good job filling it today. And tomorrow, and this is wonderful, tomorrow the entire conference will travel up to Clifton and will spend the day at the historic Cincinnati campus of Hebrew Union College. Anybody in Cincinnati who's driving up Clifton by the university is going to see a gargantuan tent on the front of the college where we're going to have our luncheon tomorrow, because there's no one building that can seat all of those people. So it's going to be a very dynamic conference, that's for sure.
We're going to get into the history of Isaac Merowise a little deeper in just a moment. But first, you listen to that interview I did with Rabbi Person. She's going to be the first female chief executive of this conference. I asked her about her feelings about the significance of this, Lance. But as a member of the organization, how do you view the significance of elevating a female to head this organization?
Well, I think it's time. And I'm very glad that it's Hara. She is particularly capable. She had been the head of our press, all of our prayer books and Bible commentaries, and then went up to strategy officer. And I think she, as well as anyone, if not the best, can articulate the moment for our movement. As you heard, there's now over 700 women rabbis. And if you go out into the world of the synagogues, that's matched by hundreds of synagogues led by women presidents, women volunteers. It's time for a full share on both sides of the aisle, men and women. And I think Hara's going to carry us into that future beautifully.
Gary, as we start to transition into the discussion about Isaac Merowise, first, give those of us who aren't Jewish sort of the Cliff's Notes explanation of what Reform Judaism is.
Well, Reform Judaism is what we would say is the is a liberal interpretation of the Jewish tradition. And, of course, the more traditional, the more you're going to end up seeing people practicing according to the traditional rituals and laws of ancient Judaism as they've been practiced for thousands of years. The more liberal side is a willingness to depart and to be engaging in new ideas. And so our movement, WISE, I'm not so sure, as you heard from Rabbi Person, I'm not so sure that Dr. WISE would have wanted to have, if you will, a strict denomination of Reform. That probably was not his main goal, because he was a unifier. He wanted to find an American Judaism. But as things unfolded, we ended up with denominations, just like in American religion. And so we have what we call the Reform movement in Judaism. And WISE has been catapulted into the role of being the founder of that initiative.
And that started here in Cincinnati.
Well, there were Reform manifestations in other places, but we always refer to Cincinnati as the cradle of American Reform Judaism because of WISE and because all the institutions that you've just heard about were established here. And this gives Cincinnati, by the way, for all those who are listening, gives Cincinnati, in terms of Judaism, an international perch. And that's not an exaggeration. All around the world, because of the prominence of Reform Judaism, remember that in America, and this is unique in all the world, in America, Reform Judaism is the largest expression of Judaism anywhere in the world. Any other country where there are Jews living, including, of course, the State of Israel, Reform is not the majority expression. It's only the United States of America, and therefore Cincinnati is almost, if you will, inexorably linked to this particular movement.
So the convention this year is in Cincinnati in celebration of the 130th anniversary of the Central Conference Convention and the 200th anniversary of the birth of Isaac Merowise. So Lance, yes, Tell us a little bit about this man.
So he was an extraordinary man. He was a force of nature. He was born in what today would be the Czech Republic in 1819. He believed that he was an American even before he immigrated. And when he hit these shores in the 1840s, he went to work with a deep-seated belief that I think he brought with him from Europe, that America was going to be the place – where a modern expression of Judaism would flourish. And he believed that he personally had a role in making that happen. And he used his considerable talents, his intelligence, and his energy. This was an incredibly energetic man every day for the rest of his life to make it happen, and it bore fruit.
So how did it happen? How does he arrive in Cincinnati, and then how does all of this change begin?
Well, he originally goes to New York, and then he is sent, quote, up the river to Albany, and he spends several years there in a congregation in Albany, runs into some trouble with the leadership there, and decides to reinvent himself by going west of the Alleghenies where the action was. This was the time of the growing American frontier. He felt this was the cutting edge. There was widespread German immigration, and Cincinnati was the place to go. So by the 1850s, he is here in Cincinnati. He digs in deep. There are some temptations to leave, but ultimately he understood that his destiny was tied up with the Jewish community of Cincinnati, and he learned to work very well with the business community and other aspects of life here on the Ohio River.
And Gary, you mentioned that when the temple was founded, that there were only about 300 members.
That's right.
But he built it as such to accommodate more than 1,000. What gave him the confidence that this was going to grow?
Well, it's hard to understand, but I think we all know people who are just by disposition visionaries and positivists, and this is the kind of man that he was. You just heard Dr. Sussman tell you about how he comes to Cincinnati in 1854. One of my favorite phrases is he writes in his reminiscences, he says, when he accepts the post here in Cincinnati, and again, it's a relatively, by our standards today, modest-sized congregation. He says, I shall go to Cincinnati, and I shall establish a newspaper, and I shall avenge myself on the close-minded religious bigots. And he concludes this soliloquy by saying, and they will think of me for a century. This is I tell you this because this gives you a sense of his self-confidence. And this documents consistently depict him in this way, that he was, I like to always say, he's like a cup of coffee. It's an acquired taste. There are there are people who hated him and fought him, and yet others loved him and would follow him into the netherworld. He was larger than life, energetic, just the way Dr. Sussman depicted him. I wanted to mention something very interesting that I know is important to both of us. Dr. Sussman and I worked together in honor of the 200th birthday to create a 10-minute educational video on the life of Dr. Wise. And it's very innovative and nice, and it's for free.
And it's going to debut at this convention.
It's going to debut tomorrow. And then I want everybody who's listening to take note that all you need to do is go to the website of the American Jewish Archives, right on the landing page, and you'll be able to see a little a place where it'll tell you, you know, take a look at this video. It can be downloaded. This is, if you will, community service. Anyone who'd like to teach about Wise, because Wise is not just important to Reform Judaism. Wise is an American figure, and this is what Dr. Sussman was saying. He was consumed with this idea of Americanism and Judaism had to be amalgamated. And he's a very important 19th century American religious figure. So anyone interested in this, just go to www.AmericanJewishArchives.org, and you'll be able to download and view this really wonderful 10-minute educational video.
Well, Cincinnati was also greatly shaped as it was growing in the 19th century by an influx of Catholic immigrants as well. We can see the influence of Catholicism on the city on any Friday during the Lenten season when there's fish fries all over town. How would you describe the influence that the Jewish people have had in shaping the culture of Cincinnati?
Well, Jews came here as part of a massive German immigration. The Jews were embedded in a larger German immigration that really picks up after the War of 1812. And Cincinnati is a gateway to the West. And Jews come along, and they are in every aspect of the city's development, whether it's in the clothing industry or the development of the Ohio River, not just as a river port, but as a seaport. Jews are even involved in the development of the whiskey business. Why be across the river from Kentucky and not get into the whiskey business? So they are very deep in the economy here. They're accepted here, and they are proud to build their own institutions.
Was that always true, or were there some expressions of prejudice against Jewish immigrants that arrived in Cincinnati?
Well, you know, every time immigrants come to this country, they bring along with them their prejudices. That continues on to today. And so there's no doubt that that happened. But Wise was a great believer in the Constitution. He referred to the Declaration of Independence. He would compare to the Ten Commandments and the United States Constitution. He compared to the whole Torah itself, and was a big believer that that kind of bigotry would eventually be overcome. And the one thing he would never tolerate would be. Would he cotton to any kind of diminution of his status as a full-fledged American? And if anyone were to challenge that, he would immediately attack them on the grounds that he had equal footing under the law with everybody else.
There was a moment in December of 1862 when the Union Army sought to expel all the Jews from the area of operation in the lower Midwest and upper South. And the Jewish community obviously rose up in protest, and Wise was one of the loudest voices saying, expulsions is something that happened in Europe. It's not going to happen here. And very quickly, they got President Lincoln to overturn it. And that was very significant in terms of the basic civil rights of the Jewish community in this country. And Wise was at the forefront of that.
What was the motivation for that proposed expulsion?
Well, there could have been some economic rivalries interfering with army business. It was the exigencies of war, but you still have civil and economic rights, and it couldn't stand, and it didn't last very long. It was overturned.
The Central Conference of American Rabbis Convention is in Cincinnati through Wednesday. We'll have a link to that video that you're debuting at WVXU.org. I want to thank Dr. Lance J. Sussman and Dr. Gary P. Zola for joining us today for this conversation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.